Okay, we are back in Halacha Aleph, Simkuf Chaf Halacha Aleph. The Mechaber said, he sort of gave just a general overview that when you buy a new kli, you have to title it. And he told us that the two, you could title it either in a mikveh or in a mayan shel habayim sah, in a spring that has 40 sah in it. That word, that needs habayim sah for a mayan, is a whole to do in the poskim. But we'll just take it as is. You have to do it in a mikveh or in a mayan of 40 sah. Okay? So we're going to talk about where tefillah is performed. So most people do tefillah, kelim, in a kelim mikveh. Okay, kelim mikveh is built special for toivel and kelim. It's the right depth and height for the toivel and kelim. We'll talk about in Simon, Yemir Hashem, in Simon Reish Beis, about some of the special things that they put into kelim mikvehs that are actually questionable. Okay, some of the things that, some of the features that they add to those kelim mikvehs to make them better, that have questions of them. Okay? But, you know, so the normal thing that people do, they toivel and kelim mikveh. That's what it is. It's kelim mikveh. It's meant for toivel and kelim. Okay, but there's every once in a while, there are reasons why people want to toivel things in a people mikveh. Okay, like for example, Rabbi Asmach just had somebody who he wanted to toivel a barbecue grill. Okay, but it was 5 feet across. Okay, it was too big to fit into the kelim mikveh. Kelim mikveh are meant for toiveling pots and pans. What? So it's meant for toiveling pots and pans. So we said to him, you can toivel it in the mikveh for people. Okay, it's big. Okay, so there's two things about using the, so to speak, people mikveh. Okay, and the first thing is like this. There are some mikvahs that have a sign up in them. Some mikvahs that are meant for people have a sign in them. No tefillas kelim. Okay? No tefillas kelim allowed. Okay? And that's for, that's primarily for safety reasons. Okay? Because they're concerned if something cracks or something breaks or someone drops something and forgets to get it out, you know, so, oh, well, I lost my fork, but tomorrow someone's going to step on that fork, you know? So a lot, there are mikvahs that have signs that says no tefillas kelim. Okay? So that's simple enough. Okay? But a more halacha concern, or more simple enough, that if it says no tefillas kelim, then no tefillas kelim. They don't let.
Yeah, that's a policy.
Okay, so the other thing is that men's mikvahs are potentially not suited for tefillas kelim, okay? Because the din is that a regular mikvah, like for tefillas kelim, can't use mayim that was drawn in a kli, and the din is that for a men's mikvah, which is usually used for tefillas esrei, that's what people think of it for, you're allowed to use mayim shuvim. Okay, Mishnah Berurah says it. It's brought in Aruch Chaim, and so therefore, without knowing better, the men's mikvah might not actually be kosher for tefillas kelim. Now I don't
know where any mikvah in the world.
I have no idea, but it's potentially. You got to ask. So
I mean, the presumption is that men's
why?
Mikvah is kosher.
Because?
Because people, they make it right.
Oh. Why would they make it right? It's meant for anybody.
If you can use the world as a bar.
Usually the mikvah is the same for men and women.
Maybe
it's not. Maybe it's not.
Okay.
Trying to make it.
Okay. So the bit is that it's kosher if you use shuvim also, you know. So you just fill it up with it.
Are you aware of a mikvah that's not kosher? It's just water from
that. Okay. So you should check. Okay. So you should check and just to make sure that it's really kosher. But in a lady's mikvah is, of course, built for the way it's supposed to be. And you can do two on that. Okay. So, that's, so to speak, the easy one. To use a regular mikvah. And like everybody says, well, what do you mean? Where do you perform tefillah? You perform tefillah in a mikvah. Where's the obvious, okay? But, there are different situations when people want to tefillah kelim, not in a kelim mikvah. Particularly for people who are traveling, or people who are, they just don't live anywhere near where there's a kosher mikvah. So those people need to do tefillah. And they want to use, and just about, give or take, just about every natural body of water is really kosher for tefillah, okay? In theory, at least. Any natural body of water is going to be kosher to toivel things, as long as it has 40 sah on it. So there's a whole Simon Reish Aleph, quite a very long Simon. Okay? Obviously, we're not going to say over the whole Simon Reish Aleph. I don't know the whole Simon, but we obviously can't squeeze that into one little day. There's a whole Simon of what makes something kosher or not kosher for a mikvah. Okay, two of the most basic halachas of what makes a mikvah kosher or not kosher, makes this body of water kosher, is first of all, you can't do tefillah in a container, in a kli. It has to be in the ground. Okay, you can't do it in a big tank. You can't take a big tank and say, okay, I'm going to do tefillah, I'm going to toivel myself, or do tefillah kelim with it. And the second is, you can't use mayim shuvim, as I mentioned before, and you can't take water that was drawn, that was put into a kli once beforehand, you can't use that to make mix out of it. And people who build mikvahs put a lot of effort into making sure the thing that they're building is not a kli, and that the water that they get in is not mayim shuvim. Okay. What? attend to that, of course.
You said two.
I said two basic things. Those are two basic things. Okay, now, those two things that I mentioned are not much of a to-do for any regular, you know, natural body of water. However, there's another thing, a big difference between the source of the water for different bodies of water, okay? And that is, you could have two kinds of, a mikveh could come from one of two ways. It could either be rainwater, or it could be spring water. Spring water means that underground there are, essentially there are lakes underground, and that water spritzes out and comes out above ground as are streams and rivers, etc. The rainwater falls directly in. The first type is just rainwater just falls into a big puddle. So actually, it's just as an aside, I mean, in the din, they're not considered to be rainwater. We scientifically look at them and we say, we know that the truth is that that water gets filtered through the earth and ends up coming from rainwater, which actually explains a certain din. I'm not going to explain that now. But the term doesn't look like that. It looks at it from the if I could use the word, the what we call the lay perspective, which is the rainwater comes from down, and the spring water comes from underneath. It just pops out from underneath. It's magically from under the ground. Okay? In truth, and science looks at it now and understands how the water filters its way through and makes these pools, but that's how the term looks at it. Okay? So there are two different ways of the water coming from. Okay? And the big difference between them is like this. If the water comes from a spring, then that water is kosher to be used as a mikveh, even if the water is moving and going someplace else. Okay, what we call zeichlin. It's flowing along. I think the Mississippi River is flowing along someplace. But rainwater is only kosher if it's standing still. Okay, the spring water could be used flowing or standing still, and rainwater has to be standing still. Okay, so in most, the din looks at it that it says it in Resh Aleph, it's in Resh Aleph that. That an ocean or a river is assumed to become from a spring. Okay, if you have an ocean or a river, you assume that comes from a natural spring, and that's kosher even if it's moving. So if you go to the Mississippi River and you want to tell you something there, you're good. Okay, it's coming from a. You assume even if you don't know, you just walk by and the river water just flowing by, you say this is coming from a spring, and you could tell things in there even if the water is moving. Okay, however. This is my very poor example of a river, okay? Okay? Just. We got water, okay? There's water, and the water's flowing, okay? Well, here we call it A, and there's a spring, and that's how much water is flowing from the spring, okay? So I'm going to talk about two different questions that there are about this before we get to some, like, so to speak, real examples. Okay, like this. This is the water coming from the spring, you're allowed to table on this thing. Good. Okay, now, that's the spring flow. Now, what happens if it rains? Okay, and now the river becomes bigger. Okay, it stretches out into the area that I call B. Okay, the river stretches out from what it was originally into this bigger area. So the din is that as long as there's more spring water than rain water, then it's kosher. You could still type something in that. So you could title in B. You could title now, even though there's more spring water, you could title in this mikveh anyhow, as long as there's more spring water, okay? So the simple thing is, many people assume, I mean, it's probably the Machaber Narma, etc., many people assume that you could title even in the B section, okay? Because the B is now, it's this whole body, this A and B together, is now considered to be all. It follows the roiv is spring water, and you're allowed to be titled in, okay? It happens to be that the Shachmin that there's a Marit. Okay, that the Marek says that no, you can only title in the A section. You can't title in that B section, in the part that's only here now because it rained. Okay, that part that rained is, so to speak, was never part of the spring's amount. So according to the Marek, you can only title in the A, the part, the area of the river where the water would have flowed from the spring itself. But the part that only comes, that is only there because it rained more. The Marek says, the Shach points that the Marek says you shouldn't title on that part.
Is the V touching? I'm sorry, walking.
Yeah, yeah. Of course it rains, and now the river's just bigger. The river used to be this big, and now the river got a little bit bigger because there's more water flowing through.
I know it's A's
on the So if you live there, if you live there, I mean, you see every day the river looks like this, and now it rains, and all of a sudden the river looks like that.
When a river gets wider, by definition, it's getting higher too.
Yes.
So what about the higher part? Are they
that's a good question. I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. How am I supposed to know which is the higher part of the Nahar part? That doesn't sound like that. From my reading, it didn't sound like that was the problem. The problem was just the spread out part. I'm not sure.
Rabbi Cohen, why is it any worse than Nisuk when you have the mikvah and you have the bore where it has the rainwater?
I don't know. Okay.
What's a very good? No, it's not the same. Right. If you need it, even the upper layer. The water part is the upper layer.
Only if it's together. How do you know? This is you're in the obviously water is floating. So just because you're in the A zone, like the width of the river, doesn't mean that that's the same water.
Okay, but now if it rains a tremendous amount, okay, and now the water spreads all the way through till C, okay, all the way spreads till 3. It didn't rain just enough to fill up the Marik zone, okay. It filled up. There's a lot of rain.
The city's drowning.
It was Houston.
And now there's rain over the whole thing. So then the din is like this, okay. Then the Mechaber says. The Mechaber says you can't travel this mikvah. There's more rainwater than there is. There's more rainwater than there is spring water. The mikvah's not kosher anymore.
Because it's open.
It was running. No one's going to see it.
Who says that?
I'm sorry. I'm confusing you. I'm saying the wrong one. No, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, you can't tell when it's moving. You can tell if it was seeing through because it's rainwater. But moving, you wouldn't be able to be tell. Okay.
Because it's right.
Because rainwater now.
You will see. Just because right.
Now there's so much water that it's spread. Yeah, the fact that it's spread all the way out there tells us that now this is now mainly rainwater.
And you have another, let's say it just went off. The business where it's straight.
Yeah.
Also potentially because that's
true. Yes, just to be.
Yeah, that's just a way to.
This computer screen is not three dimensional, you know, so I can only show you this way, so I can. Okay, so. You should just know. The Rama does bring that there are Rishonim holding out like that. The Rama says the people who are Samech on that, you shouldn't aim limchus be adam. Okay, but that's not the Ikkar din is that you're not supposed to be terrible if there's too much rainwater. And we're going to work with that assumption. Okay.
And it's moving.
And it's moving that you can't use. Okay, now. Another din. Okay, I'm going to give you examples in 1 second. We're going to try to see how to make these lemites. Okay. Another din. But as we have a pool of water, okay? Now, not a pool like that, it's a swimming pool, but essentially, a hole in the ground, okay? You got a hole in the ground that has water in it, okay? Now, for purposes, for my skill of making PowerPoints and for purposes of our demonstration, okay, the water in this pool is, this water all at the top of this hole in the ground, okay? I split into two sections because this drain pipe. The din is that if there's a drain pipe and water is noticeably flowing out of the pool of water, then that water is considered to be moving. Okay, that water is considered to be moving because it's flowing out. Okay, so you've heard that, if a mikveh has a leak, it's not just that they're worried because there won't be enough water left. It's because if a mikveh has a leak, then the water is considered to be zeichlin. You can't tovel on it. It's rainwater, and rainwater that's moving, you can't tovel on that water. So if there's a leak, that's really bad news. Okay, now, the Mechaber says
the Mechaber says,
in a case like this, the section called D, the section that's below the drain, is not moving. The Mechaber says you can tovel on that part. But the part that's E, you obviously can't tovel on. The part that's E is considered to be moving because it's draining out. It's pouring out the drain. That's what the Mechaber says. The Rama says, no. You can't even tovel on D either. You can't even tovel in the stationary part. Really, if you look where the drain is, the water of E is going to drain out. D is going to stay there. D is not going anyplace. But the Mechaber says, Rama says, no, even D is considered to be moving water, and you can't title in D.
Until it empties out.
Well, once it hits, drains to the bottom, once it drains past the drain, it's not moving anymore, now all of a sudden D becomes crushed again. But while it's draining, you can't title in either D or E. Okay? I had never known that. Rabbi Frankel from Starkey told me. Okay, it is. It's a Mechaber and Rama about this game. Okay? So a Sephardi could title in D the whole time, and an Ashkenazi has to wait till E drains out before he can title in D. Okay. Okay, so, you think, who cares? Okay, I'm going to tell you who cares.
No, I don't care. Give them to my restaurant.
If it's a Friday thing, you can type on the camera. Got it. Okay. Okay, so I want to now go through seven real-life examples. Okay, my point here is not for the examples to tell you you should or shouldn't type on these places. You'll see many of them we're going to leave off as not so clear whether you can or can't. But really, the point is to bring out that deciding whether you can type on in a given body of water that's not a plain mikvah or not like the ocean, okay, is very questionable. Okay, and you have to know a lot before you could decide where you can or cannot tell something. Okay, so these examples are more for the examples of it, more of us to think about it and on this to realize sort of how it can get complicated. Okay, so the first one is easy. Okay, the first one is if you want to tell something in Lake Michigan. Okay, Lake Michigan, like we assume, is fed by streams, by springs. Okay, that's what the din tells us. We should assume that. I mean, Our scientists would say that also. We should assume that it's fed by springs, and therefore, even though every day approximately 1 billion gallons of water is sucked out of the lake to come give us all drinking water, okay, and the water flows out afterwards on the other end towards the ocean, okay, even so, it's zeichlin, the water is considered to be moving, but even so, it's kosher because it comes from a spring, okay, it's a regular, good old-fashioned body of water that you assume comes from a spring, and you could tell what things in there, even though the water is considered to be zeichlin, the water is considered to be moving.
Even during and after?
Doesn't make a difference. Right. You don't have anything to be concerned. You assume that the springs are overwhelming, is much more than the rainwater, and you're allowed to take them. Okay. That's the easy one.
Is that a fact in Lake Michigan? There's a lot of springs underneath it?
Well, springs in it and springs feeding to it. I mean, rivers that feed into it that themselves are spring fed.
So if it's fed from a stream, it's not anything that comes out of Lake Michigan is also going to be like that?
It's all spring fed, yes.
I mean, and
all that water is going to be crushed even though it's moving. Okay? Okay, now, that's a simple one. Well, to me, it's a simple one. Okay. The next one. Okay, sure. The Chicago River. The Chicago River, the North Branch, that flies... That, no pictures, I'm sorry, for this. I was going to, but no pictures for you. Okay, so what's the North Branch that drives, goes right past down McCormick. Goes right down McCormick. So that actually comes from a spring also. Comes from a number of springs in the northern suburbs, Skokie and some of the other northern suburbs. And if you just knew the simple way of looking at it...
Chicago River, that's going backwards?
It's the Chicago River. Actually, that part was always going that way.
Right. Okay,
it was always going that way. It's the southern branch that was switched around. I'll get to that in a second. But it was coming from a spring. And if you didn't know better, you would say, yeah, you could tell things there. Okay. However, what happened was in the late 1800s, approximately the year 1900, when they switched around the river, this tremendous engineering feat that they switched around the flow of the river and they built a canal, made a whole to-do. The reason for that whole thing, while they switched around the direction of the river and this whole to-do, the north branch, the main stem it's called, this whole thing, while they switched it around was because they wanted to use the Chicago River as a way to dispose of treated wastewater. Okay? They want that treated wastewater to head to the Mississippi River.
Treated wastewater in 1900?
So they, do something with it. They want that treat. Maybe it wasn't treated, then I don't know. But the treated wastewater, they want to head to the Mississippi River. So the whole redirection was to keep it out of Lake Michigan and head it, feed it towards the Mississippi River. So what? In fact, I don't know. It's only Wikipedia, but it's quoting somebody who I couldn't find the source. But it's quoting somebody who says that during the winter, I assume it rains less. Okay. At times, 75% of the water in that river are coming from the water treatment plant down here at the end of Howard. It's called the
water treatment plant.
Sorry, 75% of the.
It's called the Northside Water Reclamation Plant. It's coming from that water treatment plant at the end of Howard, on Howard and McCormick. It's flowing. 75% of the water in the North Branch of the Chicago River is coming from that water treatment plant.
Wow. Okay,
that's where the water's coming. So that means what does that mean to us? That means that's Mayan Shuvim. So what's the thing? If you have a Mayan that hits Mayan Shuvim, okay, if a Mayan that hits Mayan Shuvim, a Mayan of a spring that's hitting, being overwhelmed by Mayan Shuvim, and the Ramah says that in that case, you could be tidal in it, but not when it's moving. Of course, the water is moving here, so you can't. That means you can't do tefillas kelim with it, if you even want to. You can't do tefillas kelim in it. I mean, maybe if you hear that it's treated water. But the Rama says that if a spring is feeding, is more Mayan Shuvim than there is spring water, then you can't use it when the water is moving. You can use it when it's sitting still. Okay, so. Yeah. So then, in that case, the water has to be sealing still. Okay, so if it's really true that it's sometimes it's 75%, then you're up the creek. Okay.
It is a creek.
The Maverick Zone, that has to also be rove?
Right, it has to be more spring water than rainwater. If there's more rainwater, when it gets to the sea zone, that's the sea zone, when there was more rainwater, then you can't tell what's moving. Okay, now. Okay. Okay, the next one. Next one is something called Sugar Creek. Okay.
We had a cheese company.
That I don't know.
Sugar Creek
is this very, it's a 90-mile-long stream. Runs through a good part of Indiana. part that we would come across is that it runs right behind, it runs pretty close to Camp Nagila, to Camp Marama. Okay? It's a nice sized river, a nice sized stream, they call it. In that stream has a good flow, and you'd be out of time when it comes from springs. It's assumed to be, and in fact, the science will tell you, well, it come from springs, and you're okay. However, when there are big rains, it could happen that there'll be big rains, and there'll be more rainwater than there will be spring water. Okay? According to Brian, okay, Brian's the caretaker in camp.
What's his husband?
Heather.
Heather.
Right. So, according to Brian, on a regular day, the river will be 25 feet wide and 2 feet deep. Okay? When there's huge rains, he said, when the winter, the spring flood rains, okay, it'll be 15 feet deep. Okay? Okay. The amount they said wide, I have a feeling was a typo, okay? But it'll be 15 feet deep. Okay? So there'll be huge amounts of much more rainwater than there is spring water, in which case, if during that time, you wouldn't be able to tell you while it's moving.
That's from rain or that's from melting snow? It doesn't matter.
From rain. He thought it was from rain. He's not a scientist. I mean, he's just Brian. Yeah. But
he might be watching.
He might be. Okay, now, but even when there's less rain, even when there's a certain amount of rain, you're going to have the shiloh of this Marik zone. Okay, now, Rabdusky told people that they should be choshish of the Marik. Okay, I don't know whether everybody else would say that same thing also. But that means it's about a regular day, it's 15 feet wide and it's 2 feet deep. And today, it rained, and now it's 18 feet wide. So it's still kosher. You'll have to be toivel in it. But according to the Marik, you can only be toivel in the part that's the center part of the river, of the stream, and not the wider part of the stream. Okay?
But you can't be toivel at all in it because
it's spring water, so you can be toivel when it's moving.
Right, but if it's more...
But if it's more rainwater, you can't be toivel in it. But what happens if it's just a little rainwater? So when it went from 15 feet across to 18 feet across, so it's still kosher to toivel when it's moving, but according to Merck, you can't do it on the inside. Okay. Another one. Wallapo Creek. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Wallapo Creek. Okay, this, if you've been, if you went to Camp Nagila, you're more likely, or Marama, to bank into the Wallapo Creek, okay? You may not know by that name, but you may know it as Knopf Falls, okay, if you've ever been there, okay, if you've been, yeah. Which is like this, okay? Which is to say like this. This creek, if you come by there on a day when it hasn't rained in a while, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I've seen it, okay? It sort of looks like someone left a garden hose on, okay? That's like what it looks like. Someone left a hose on. It's just like a little trickle of water coming down here, okay? Maybe it's a little more than a garden hose, okay? But nothing very serious, okay? When it rains, okay, Wallapo Creek, I mean, turns into this huge amount. I mean, huge. Everything's yellow, everything. But all of a sudden, it goes from being Marisol left the garden hose on to a tremendous amount of rain. Okay, and then that's when the falls look nice. And then when you see the pictures from camp, and especially about these beautiful falls, that's because it rained.
They get fish in that because of that?
No, not in there. But obviously, we'll get to the fish in a second. Okay. So the
you know where I'm coming from.
So in this one, in the Wallapo Creek actually empties into Sugar Creek, if you're curious. But in Wallapo Creek, okay, it's very often gets overwhelmed by the rain. Okay, so whereas in Sugar Creek, it's a nice, strong river, and at times it can be so much rain that it'll be overwhelming. Okay, it can happen, but in Wallapo Creek, it's much more common. Okay, so now there's another thing. Wallapo Creek has, right after the Knopf Falls, there's like a big, like a pool. There's a place where the water plops out. It's like a pool, like a swimming pool, like a little thing. Okay, now that place where the water is. When the water is flowing out of it, it's zeichlin. Okay, so it's only kosher if there isn't too much rainwater. If the water isn't flowing out of it, then it's rainwater. Then you could actually do typhon on it. Typhon things it. Okay. Next.
This is going to be lost on the prairie.
Okay. Next. Okay. Nagila also has a...
Nagila here?
Nagila. I've been there. Okay. Nagila's got... Marava, whichever one you want to call it. It's got a pond or a lake, depending on who you ask, okay, whether it's called a pond or a lake. Okay, now this one's a little touchier. Okay. Uh-oh. And that's like this. Someone who I asked about it said, the Red First tells people all the time, you can't title things in it. You can't title it because it's man-made. Okay? Because, I mean, you never know if it was man-made or not. Tell them it's man-made, you can't be titled in it. That's what one person said to me. So, called him first. I said, is it true? Is that what he says? He says, yes, you can't title on it. He says, it was man-made. No one has any really knowledge of how it was made originally. And the din is, if you make a hole in the ground, and you put mayim shuvim into it, put three lugim, basically a very little amount of mayim shuvim into it, then even if you pour on rainwater on top of it, it doesn't make a difference. It stays puzzled. He says, so, being as we don't know the history, you know, how this thing was made, they tell me it was made in the 80s, that's what Brian says, it was made in the 1980s, is when they made this man-made lake, so we don't know the history of how it was done. He says, you can't tell us on that. Okay, well, that's what, so I mentioned that to somebody. He says, I don't know what to tell you. He told me that you can't tell you on that. Okay, so now, Rabbi, first, I don't know if you get something to tell me, say to him, someone told me, before you finish your sentence, he says, I didn't say it. Okay, so in this case, not only didn't he say it, but he told me himself that he is. We're working on some of the details, okay, what is... There are those who claim that this pond is actually fed by springs. If it's fed by springs, we're better off. Okay, and the pond also has an overflow. Okay, it's like the case that I told you before about my funny picture on the side there. Okay, it has an overflow. If it has an overflow and the water is flowing out of it right now, then you can't even use the lower water unless you connect to a
mine. Well, that's a smarty thing.
Right, that's correct. So if the water is... If the drain is open now because there was too much water, the drain is open and it's flowing out, it flows out into Wallopo Creek, which flows into Sugar Creek. Okay, that's where it flows out to. If the water is flowing out now, and it's not spring water, if it's rainwater, so if it's flowing out now, then you can't even tell you in the deeper parts of it. So what that means is, if you think that, I don't yet know if it's rainwater or spring water, worked on that. But not if it would be that it's rainwater, and if it happens to be that the drain is open right now, if things are flowing through the drain, then according to the Rambam, you can't tell you any place in the river, in that pond.
Okay. They have a drain?
A drain, not a drain on the bottom, like you pull out of your bathtub. There's an overflow, a place where the water could overflow. When it gets too high, it flows out a certain direction, so it heads to the creek.
They did that way?
Yeah. They built a thing into it. So when they built this creek, because otherwise it would flood the camp, I guess. The idea is this way. When it overflows, it goes that way towards Wallopo Creek, towards Sugar Creek, or to the Mississippi River.
Okay.
I missed, there's another lake there, and then to the Mississippi River. Okay. How many got here? Five? Okay.
Five guys here, goes to 11.
You have seven. Okay. There's something here about 45 minutes from here, the Independence Grove Forest Preserve. Okay? If you go there, it's this beautiful park with biking and trails and things to do. You know, beautiful park. But in the middle of it, it's got this huge, huge, what I call a lake. I don't know if it's called a technically lake. Huge. Okay? It's a huge thing. You look at this thing. If you walked over to this, okay, if Lewis and Clark came across this, they think this gorgeous lake that's been here since Shesha's Migrations. Okay? If they came out, if you see this thing, it look, it's this big, beautiful lake. Okay, if it's not like the Nagila Pond, okay, this is a big, beautiful lake. Okay, but the truth is that in the 50s and 60s, okay,
1900.
Yes, in 1950s and 60s, that place was called the Peterson Sand and Gravel Quarry. Okay, and the Peterson Sand and Gravel Quarry dug out a hole 3,500 feet across and 60 to 75 feet deep, okay, of whatever they were quarrying out of this mine, okay? They dug away and they made this monstrous hole in the ground, okay? In the late 70s, the state bought the land from these people and decided that they would turn this hole in the ground into a lake, okay? They were going to reclaim it and turn it into this beautiful vacation area, okay? Which is what they did, okay? It took them some time. Okay, and by about approximately in the year 2001, the thing opened up as this park that we know of today. That's it opened up. Okay, so that's a really good question. That's a really good question. And what is it like this?
4 years.
Well, in reading what they did, it describes how there's this huge cement pipe on the bottom of it. Okay? I haven't yet gotten to the bottom of figuring out why that is. That cement pipe to bring in water, to take water out. It wasn't clear to me what that big pipe is there for. It seems that there is a big cement pipe, and I don't know why.
A big cement pipe.
What?
Big cement pipe going from what to what?
It wasn't clear to me. Well, they described it as a big...
They didn't talk
big,
about it.
No. And their paper... I don't know. Maybe a pipe is just to go from the left, just to bring water across. I don't know what the point is. The pipe is man-made. Wait, well, so when I read all this, I said, well, sounds like this whole thing is man-made, okay? And we have to then, well, now our question is, okay, well, if that doesn't sound too good, sounds like then it's potentially just rainwater. Now, rainwater would be kosher unless it also has an overflow or if it has a drain pipe. So if there's an overflow...
If they had something shooting in there when they first made it, it also wouldn't be good.
it would potentially not be good. Or if it had, even if it's all rainwater, but if there's a drain and some end, like water can escape out of, then we mess the whole thing up again. And how would I know if 500 feet from here the drain is open? So we need some more information on that. But then I found I found an article in the Tribune from 2001 when it opened up. Okay, and the article said, it just must mention in passing again, I don't know how accurate this is, that during the time that there was a mine in this place, okay, there was actually a spring, and they diverted that spring to keep the water out of it. And you can imagine, it's not easy getting out your sand and gravel when there's water pouring into it. So potentially, I don't know what the truth is. Okay, I don't know the truth, but potentially it means is that the spring was being diverted. When they finished and they were ready to make this into a lake, they let the spring fill it back up again. Potentially, we don't know. So potentially it is good. Maybe it is a mine and it's a real, so to speak, lake. It just, it didn't used to be a big hole. They dug the hole out, but what filled it up after was the mine, in which case it would be cautious even if the water was moving. Okay?
A man-made hole
would hold the ground, would be kosher, as long as there wouldn't be more shuvan than regular water, which is not. Right, if it's man-made, if there's man-made and you had put it in regular water, shuvan first, then you'd be messed up. But over here we had the connection to a mine. Because it was he said there was shuvan was put into it. The guy turned on the hose and started filling it up. We have no idea what it is. So okay, we're working on that stuff, but okay. Okay, and last, so in this one, has the appearance of being spring-fed? Okay, the parts of it are man-made, and it is. Okay, so what I'm trying to bring up with all my examples here, and I have one more example, is that if you look at this thing, if you look at Lake Michigan, you're okay, you're safe. Okay, when you look at things that have other parts to it, particularly if there are man-made elements of this thing, or even these creeks that have a lot of rainwater, you have to know what's going on before you decide, yes, I can play on this thing. You have to know information to be able to know whether you can tell. Okay, the last one is, Adam is West. Talked about this before, and it's the Kensico Reservoir in New York.
Famous for where
the coke pods come from, or related to where the coke pods come from. The Kensico Reservoir started from this little, nice, cute little lake that was fed by springs like the way it always was. And then they built this monstrous dam on one side, 1,800 feet across and 300 feet tall, and that the water started filling up, but no way that was going to fill it up. They then also diverted this water from a huge section of upstate New York, drains it, all of its rainwater, and it, some of its springs, but all its rainwater flows right into this thing. Okay, it's assumed that thing is primarily rainwater, not spring water at this point. Most of that, the water that comes there is not from springs. Again, there's a whole watershed of protected land that all that rain feeds down to there. And, of course, all day long, there's water feeding out there to feed New York City water. Okay, if I remember correctly, I don't remember the ratio, but it was approximately, as I remember we talked about then, the amount of water that flows over Niagara Falls. Okay, that's like the speed of the amount of water that's being sucked out of that every day. So that's Zeichlin. Okay, so assuming it's rainwater, and it's Zeichlin.
When you say rainwater is flowing into it, if it's above the ground, it's a problem. Below the ground, it's fine.
Right, but I mean rainwater means it rains and flows down the mountains and flows into the air. Above ground. That's my understanding. Okay, this is tremendous area in upstate New York, owned by New York City as their watershed. It's protected that to keep their water flowing to them, and it's assumed, I believe, to be mainly rainwater. Okay. If you have patience, I'm going to keep on going. I finished with water. Okay. I'm going to continue. Okay. Hope you have patience. I'll continue. Talk about snow. Okay. There's a Mishnah that talks about tefillah being in snow. Oh, the Mishnah's in Mikvahs. No surprises there. The Mishnah says in Mikvahs talks about doing tefillah in snow. And the Beis Yosef brings a Machlokes Rishonim whether when the Mishnah says that snow is suitable for tefillah, does that mean you could tefillah in the snow when it's actually snow? When it's still in its sort of frozen state, or is it only kosher to tefillah after it melts? Okay, is it kosher as is when it's in snow, or only after it melts? Okay, so the Beis Yosef says after a whole long discussion of it, I put a lot of words here. I don't know if you want to read that, but the Beis Yosef says that he's convinced that the Mechilim are correct, and that really you're allowed to tefillah even when it's in its snow form. That's the cooler in this case. You could tefillah even when it's still snow. He says, but Lamaisa is, or other Rishonim who disagree, And therefore, he doesn't think you should do it for a deraisa. He says you should be machmer by a case by a deraisa, okay, and not be tayvul in this thing, because the Rishonim hold you're not allowed to. Again, he doesn't think that's the ikkar thing. He thinks all the rayas seem to point to that you're allowed to. He says, but it's too serious. And he says you can't, so you shouldn't do it for a two of a deraisa. Okay, now the machaber doesn't bring that. The machaber doesn't say, just says you could be tayvul in snow. He doesn't say anything about deraisas and derabbanan and this and that. The Ramah says, you know, you should wait till it's toiv to wait until it melts and not to be summoned on those who shine. Again, the Mechaber doesn't say anything. The Mechaber, I think, you don't like his pashas in the Beit Yosef that it's mutter. The Shach is not very happy about it. And the Chachmas Adam says what I believe is what most people do say is the din is, which is Peshas Avkak, and it's only the thing that's chayv and tiyum with the Rabbanan, then you could do it. Okay, so the Beis Yosef was like, maybe she machmer for the Rabbanan, and the Chacham Sodom, which I think is pretty accepted, that's what people do, is they would only be tayvul in its snow form when it's a Rabbanan and it's a Shas Avkak. Okay.
Just glass.
Now, I mean, a Rabbanan. Glass meaning a thing that only chayv a Rabbanan. So now, that's one question. Okay, so that pretty much takes away chances of being tayvul in glass, in snow. However, there's a second machlokes, and that is, the Beis Yosef has another shayla about what happens when you want to do tefillah in snow. Now, nearly that you're allowed to do it in the snow when it's in its snow form. We know that a mitzvah has to be the volume of an amma by an amma by three ammas. Okay, so do we look at the snow, the amount of snow that fills up that space? So take the mikvah, put enough snow to fill an amma by an amma by three ammas, and then you can tefillah on it. Or do you say, no, the snow doesn't have nearly that much water. If the snow melted, it would take up, you know, much less space than that, and then we have to wait until it gets into its melted form. I'm sorry, you have to judge the amount of snow that would fill up a mikvah of liquid in that size. In other words, you need much more snow. What do you say?
My understanding, 10 inches of snow.
I'm about to tell you about that. Okay. So he brings machlokes about that.
Is he?
The Beisheset brings machlokes about that, and he says, the din is that you should use it in, count it as if it's in liquid form. Okay, make the cheshbon based on how much water it would be. Okay, so that means the amount of snow that fits into an amma by three ammas is not enough. You need much more than that, which would be, when melted, would fill up an amma by three ammas. Okay, but when it's still in its snow form, you're not allowed to do it. Okay, now, I didn't see anyone who's explained this. Okay, how do I make that conversion? Basically, he talks about compacting it and about seeing how much it will be when it melted. But I only saw one person who spoke about it, a contemporary person who tried to speak about things. Okay, well, how much does that mean? What does that mean? Well, Lamaisa, how much snow does it have to be? So now you realize, of course, that most people don't talk about the shayla because of the first thing we said, which is you can't title it when it's in its snow form. Anyhow, only if it's a shas of kach and a drabonon. So it's not such a relevant shayla to figure that out. Most people who are using snow are taking snow to fill up their mikvah. So when it fills, they're waiting for it to melt anyhow. But Rabbi Hanneman said, he says, I'm going to tell you how much snow you need to have if you actually tie it in the snow, meaning if it's glass and shas of kach. Okay? So he says, a little bit of what I'm about to say is I'm filling in some empty spaces here, but he says like this. Rav Moshe, in one of his tshuvas, says that for mikvahs you should measure an amma as being 24 inches. Now, it happens to be there's another tshuva who says 24 and a half. But he says 24 inches. Okay? If an amma is 24 inches, then how much water, how many cubic feet of water do you need to have for a mikvah? If you make the cheshbon, it comes out to 24 cubic feet. Okay? If it's 24 inches in an amma, it comes out to 24 cubic feet to make up a mikvah. Okay. He says, well, it's well known, as he just mentioned, that 10 inches of snow is equal to 1 inch of rain. So if you have 24 cubic feet of snow of rain, of water, you'd have to have 240 cubic feet of snow. Which he says that if you could help you understand what that means is, he says this, that if you take a piece of wind that's 27 feet by 27 feet, okay, a square that's that much snow, and the snow is of course touching each other, it's all contiguous, then if the snow would be 4 inches deep, that comes out to the right amount. Okay, if you want to know the math, 24 feet, 4 inches deep.
Yeah.
So 27 feet by 27 feet by a third of a foot comes out as 243 feet. So you have the right amount. Okay, that's what he says. Okay, so the logic of that makes sense, but we're going to see for two opposite reasons why it appears that that's not correct. Okay, what do you think is not correct? And that's like this.
Who's calling me? Tell Scurs.
Who's calling you?
Starkey.
Okay. The NOAA, a government agency, okay, printed a guide that says, it's true that you need 10 inches of snow for every 1 inch of rain, but really, that only is true, it depends what temperature it is when the snow comes down. Okay? If the temperature is, oh, you see, from 34 to 28, then the rain, then it's a 10 to 1 ratio. Okay? But as it gets colder and colder, the ratio goes up as high as 100 to 1, the ratio of snow to rain. The snow to water. How much water does that snow contain? Okay? So, okay.
It should depend on how compacted
it is. I'll come to compacted in a second. But when, the ratio that he's working with that says that it has to be, that has to be 10, that's 10 to 1 ratio, that's only true, that's only true when the, when it's colder.
Why is it warmer?
When it's warmer, I'm sorry, when it's warm. Now, so, Rabbi Heinemann said is, when he said that his 240 cubic feet, that's because we go with a 10 to 1 ratio when it's snowing at a warmer temperature. Okay, but if you look at the numbers here, you see that what happens if it's 15 to 19 degrees? Okay, then you need twice as much. Okay, so the idea that says that you need to have the right amount of snow compared, you have to have the rain that would, the water that will come out of that snow, that his number that he gave was true at a certain temperature, but as it gets colder, if it's snowing here and it's 15 degrees, then you need twice as much. Okay?
Does it matter what the temperature is now, or it was when it snowed?
I'm talking about when it's snowing. Okay? The temperature, I'm going to get to the second point in a second. Just be patient. Now, so, according to Rabbi Heinemann said was, that how much inch do you need if it's 27 feet by 27 feet? So he said you need 4 inches of snow. Okay, but as you see in the chart, if it was much colder, you need twice as much, or more than it. Depending on how cold it is, depends on how much snow you're going to need. Okay, to help us make a molomizer, I calculated how big the CRC parking lot is. Okay, our parking lot is 50 feet by 40 feet.
You can't have that handicap.
I didn't count the H5. I didn't. And if it
stands by,
it's 50. No, I didn't. So it's 52 feet by 40. So now, if it would be the temperature 28 to 34, then almost like an inch and a half of snow, we could tie both things in there. Okay? An inch and a half of snow. But depending on what the temperature is, if it was 0 degrees, then we need almost 6 inches of snow. Okay? So it depends on what the temperature is.
Yeah, we have the whole Chicago covered with snow. It's going to be good.
So, if you're right. What's contiguous, whatever the snow is touching counts. So you're right. If we have lots to connect.
Right. You
have the whole block.
If they plowed the alley and they did our sidewalk, then all of a sudden we don't have it. It's not connected.
You go to a park by the streets for the whole block long.
Okay, so you have to have the right piece.
You go to a park.
Yes. You go to a park. Yes, correct. You go to the park, you go to the park. Now, that's the first thing. Okay, this is the first question. The first one side. Which is to say that... Okay, which is to say that you're going
to
need...
We'll talk later.
Which is Kim. Okay. So which is to say, is according to Rabbi Heinemann saying, seemingly you should need more if it's colder. The second question is that the NOAA makes a point of saying that all their ratios are true when the snow first falls. But once the snow fell on the ground, with time, it compacts, and all of a sudden... an inch of snow has much more water in it than it used to have it, okay? So, this chart is saying to you, no, you have to be more macher, you need more snow, the truth is that that's only as the snow is falling. Once the snow finished falling, and the snow is now compacting on itself, now you can get away with even less snow, okay? Anyway, the NOAA says, we have no way to hedgeman that for you, tell you how much it compacted, there's all kinds of fancy ways to measure. If you're a meteorologist and you want to measure how much snow there is now, how compact is, they have a way to do it. But that's not for me and you. Okay? But that's saying Lakula, which is...
That's what Heinemann meant.
What he's saying?
That's what he meant, because you're not going outside in the snowstorm. You wait till it falls.
So it's a judgment. It could be 10... Okay, I don't believe so.
If it stays 10 below, it's not going
to
become...
No, it will. No, it will continue to compact. On its own, it will compact. And it'll grab and it'll fall down.
Nobody stamped on it.
Will compact.
So,
that's what it is. It's a gravity thing. Okay. It depends on how much snow there was originally, how much it's pressing on itself, etc. Okay. Okay. So there's two opposite sides. And again, we're back to where we started, which is we don't really know the answer, which is, first of all, leaving us sort of hanging of, well, how much snow? It says you have to have the amount of snow there will be water. We don't really know how much that is. Okay. I'm just about done. And that is, one last thing is about you typing the snow, which is, this is in civil rage base, which says, as you all know this thing, which is that, of course, when you title something, it has to be all in the water. But it doesn't only have to be all in the water, it all has to be touching the water. which is to say is, if that is an ear bubble, you have a, you're cuddling something with an ear bubble in it, then the ear the whole bottle is in the water. But the ear bubble is sort of in between, and there's no water touching certain parts because of that ear bubble, that's not a kosher tefillah. Okay? So that's within some reach base. But this, that applies even in more seriousness when you're tefillah in snow. Because if I stick something into the snow, they're much more, it's much easier for there to be spaces where the snow is not actually touching the cleat.
Right.
So in order to tefillah something in the snow, not only you have to find the right amount of snow, and not only does it have to be a drabbanon and only shasat chag, the snow would have to be touching all the surfaces again, which is much harder than getting water.
Right.
So, again, in din, you're only allowed to do it if it's a shasat chag and it's a drabbanon, it needs to be a drabbanon. And you have to, calculation-wise, you have to make this whole fancy calculation to figure out, or go to the park, okay? And then also, realistically, you have to get snow to touch every spot, which is, again, it's not easy, it's not water.
Is it melting, is it
No.